Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording in our studio at the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. We open our show with the latest actions by the San Diego City Council to put a minimum wage ordinance on the ballot and to enact mandatory water restrictions. Learn about an airbag recall that's impacting millions of vehicles after the airbags exploded, sending shrapnel into faces of drivers and passengers. Here's some startling news about hands-free devices that many motorists are using and why they may not be safer after all. Also on the safety front, the Red Cross offers some fire safety tips. Today, we debut a new specialty segment called Animal Tales, hosted by Mimi Pollack, who gets the series off to a running start with a special report on efforts to save endangered cheetahs. And that includes a visit with an international cheetah conservation expert who stopped off at a benefit event right here in East County. Speaking of benefits, we'll tell you about our very own Party with the Press coming up this Sunday, and you are all invited. And then on Destination East County, Rebecca Williamson and Leon Thompson will tell you about some spectacular events coming up for Halloween, from a costume skating party at Viejas Outdoor Ice Rink to Haunt Fest on Main Street in El Cajon. Plus, we'll have previews of some coming attractions, including a wine tasting festival at a castle in Ramona and a hot chili cook-off in Lemon Grove. We'll also have the latest on the West Nile virus outbreak in California and a scandal at the Descanso Community Water District. You'll hear why a local congressman was named Best Party Animal in Congress, and you'll hear about East County Magazine's latest award-winning writers in the San Diego Press Club competition. Also today, we'll have a couple of our Best of East County replays. Janice Russell speaks with Dr. Jean-Marat Carroll about her humanitarian efforts to help children in Haiti. And on Bookshelf, hear Raina Menashe's interview with award-winning horror novelist Mark Clement. So stay tuned, because we'll have all of this and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.
If you're a minimum wage worker in San Diego, the raise the city council voted for won't be taking effect after all, at least not until voters weigh in on the June 2016 ballot. After council voted to raise the minimum wage citywide starting in January, corporate and business interests opposed to the wage hike spent an estimated $500,000 to hire paid signature gatherers and collected enough signatures to qualify a ballot measure that would repeal the minimum wage hike. The increase in wages previously approved by city council is now blocked until voters weigh in. In response, the city council on Monday voted unanimously to put its original measure on the ballot for a minimum wage hike, since their only other legal option would have been to rescind the wage hike. The council wants to raise the minimum wage to $11.50 an hour starting in January 2017, with future increases indexed to inflation annually. If voters opt to raise the minimum wage, City Attorney Jan Goldsmith says employers might have to pay the increased wages retroactively to January 2015, the date when council originally approved the minimum wage increase to take effect, 10 News reports. The city's plan would also give 5 paid sick days a year to all full-time workers. Todd Gloria, author of the bill to raise the minimum wage, says people are struggling. We can't leave them behind while the cost of living continues to increase, he adds. But former Mayor Jerry Sanders, who now heads up the San Diego Regional Chamber of Commerce, contends that what workers really need is job training, not, quote, artificially inflated wages. The minimum wage hike is also opposed by the California Restaurant Association and the hotel industry. Having the minimum wage issue on the ballot is expected to motivate Democrats to turn out at the polls, a move that could cost Republicans in the June 2016 presidential primary election. This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ.
By a unanimous vote, San Diego City Council has voted to impose mandatory water restrictions starting November 1st. The move aims to prevent a water supply shortage, since the drought has dropped local reservoirs to just 44% of capacity. Under the mandatory water restrictions, residents in the city of San Diego will be required to limit watering the lawn to only 3 days a week. They will be required to use hoses with shutoff nozzles or sprinklers on timers to water landscaping. Washing of gardens, fruit trees, and potted plants will only be permitted before 10 a.m. or after 4 p.m. Washing vehicles will only be permitted before 10 a.m. or after 6 p.m. Watering lawns or plants on rainy days will be prohibited under the new rules. Those who violate these rules may be sent a letter asking them to correct the issue and stop wasting water. If nothing is done, a call or visit may be made to the property, after which code enforcement will be notified if the situation is not fixed. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena. By a unanimous vote, San Diego City Council has voted to impose mandatory water restrictions starting November 1st. The move aims to prevent a water supply shortage, since the drought has dropped local reservoirs to just 44% of capacity. Under the mandatory water restrictions, residents in the city of San Diego will be required to limit watering the lawn to only 3 days a week. They will be required to use hoses with shutoff nozzles or sprinklers on timers to water landscaping. Washing of gardens, fruit trees, and potted plants will only be permitted before 10 a.m. or after 4 p.m. Washing vehicles will only be permitted before 10 a.m. or after 6 p.m. Watering lawns or plants on rainy days will be prohibited under the new rules. Those who violate these rules may be sent a letter asking them to correct the issue and stop wasting water. If nothing is done, a call or visit may be made to the property, after which code enforcement will be notified if the situation is not fixed. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
A new study from AAA shows 3 out of 4 drivers believe hands-free technology in their car is safe to use, but that may not always be the case. Nick Jarmus of AAA Wisconsin says a study was just done to see if drivers are distracted by this newer technology.
With this latest study, what we've done is compare the actual systems that are on the market today against each other and try and also pinpoint what about those systems makes them more or less safe so that we can figure out how to get to a system that is safer.
Distraction is a main concern, and Jarmus said the study involved 3 levels. Visual distraction, where the driver's eyes are off the road, manual distraction, where the driver's hand is off the wheel, and cognitive distraction, like reading or sending a text with an onboard hands-free device.
Of those 3, the cognitive is really the most dangerous. And these, you know, hands-free technologies still leave you engaging in a cognitive distraction, even though they let you keep your hands on the wheel and eyes on the road.
The study categorized listening to the radio as a level 1 distraction, talking on a cell phone as a level 2 distraction, and using a speech-to-text system to listen to or to compose texts and emails was ranked a category 3 distraction. Charmer says only 1 hands-free and eyes-free system, Apple's Siri, generated a category 4 distraction. According to Jarmusch, even though drivers may think these new systems are safe to use while driving, they may not be.
If you're doing something that has to do with the task of driving, whether it's navigating or controlling the systems of your vehicle, that's one thing. But if you're going to be using them to compose or listen to messages or place phone calls, you really should pull off the side of the road in order to do that.
For Public News Service, I'm Tim Morrissey reporting.
Welcome. This is Mimi Pollack, host of East County Magazine's Animal Tales. Kumbali looked at us with soulful amber eyes. Those of us present were struck by the magnificence of the cheetah, the star attraction at a benefit event for the Cheetah Conservation Fund at the Ramona home of well-known wildlife photographer Roy Tuft and his wife Robin. The benefit honored Dr. Lori Marker, a wildlife researcher and one of the world's top experts on cheetahs, known as the Jane Goodall of the cheetah world. Dr. Lori, as she likes to be called, stopped here during her fall 2014 tour to talk about her work as founder and director of the Cheetah Conservation Fund in Namibia, Africa.
So our clan needs to grow if we're going to save the species. There's only 10,000 of them left in the wild. And that's not enough to grow that population. I set up the Cheetah Conservation Fund now, going on nearly 25 years ago. Next year will be our 25th year. I've worked with cheetahs for 40 years. Namibia is where I live, and that's where the last large remaining population of cheetahs come from.
There are only 10,000 cheetahs left in the wild, and Dr. Lurie is determined to protect him. That's a daunting task, since the vast majority of wild cheetahs are outside protected areas, and poaching is rampant.
They've been revered for over 5,000 years by humans, and we've actually loved them to near extinction. We've thinned them out of the Asian population, right now illegal trade to Africa and east parts of Africa going into the Middle East is decimating the small populations that are there because we love them. But what we don't understand is loving them means saving them.
Dr. Lurie founded the Nonprofit Conservation in 1990. Since that time, she has worked tirelessly to create a permanent conservation and research center for cheetahs in the wild. The Cheetah Conservation Fund has been working with African farmers to protect their livestock by breeding and introducing Anatolian shepherd dogs to effectively guard their herds from predators. The organization is concerned, too, with the land and habitat because much of Namibia is being invaded by Senegalia, a tough thorny bush that prevents the cheetahs from hunting and the livestock from grazing. Through her conservation program, Dr. Lurie has created Bush Block, a fuel made from compressed Senegalia pellets. It is a clean-burning fuel that can provide home heating and cooking in regions where electricity is scarce. In addition, the Cheetah Conservation Fund maintains a cheetah sanctuary to rescue and raise orphan cheetahs, as well as a 4,000-acre game camp for soft-releasing cheetahs before reintroducing them into the wild. The Cheetah Conservation Fund also has programs in education, integration of livestock and wildlife management systems, habitat restoration, predator species conservation, and sustainable development of the Namibian economy.
Very arid, very, very, very arid. And so with that, you have to make sure that you manage your livestock with the amount of grass that's there, especially in arid droughts that are going on. And then with that, you've got to have a wildlife prey base. And a healthy ecosystem really revolves around an integrated system. Livestock, wildlife, and so what you end up with livestock is you have a monosystem. And you don't want that. You want to have an integrated system with livestock and wildlife. And Namibia has been one of the leading countries in the world that showed that wildlife can also have benefit for your grasslands, wildlife can have benefit for ecotourism, wildlife can have benefit for maintaining systems that are really important. Cattle on their own, goats and sheep, don't do that. And those are the big issues that when you're dealing with the poverty systems throughout Africa, you end up not being able to actually address some of those. And so you have to look at the poverty cycle, then look at the grass, then look at the potential for ecotourism, bringing in wildlife, managing your livestock. And so cheetahs, look at this animal. Is it going to go out and get a cow? It's going to catch a calf that might be under a month of age, and that's where 90% of losses might be. But our Namibian farmers have figured out that if they protect their calves under 1 month, they're not only going to protect their calves from cheetahs, but also from leopards, hyenas, and jackals. And so the programs that we've learned and taught and work with not only help save the cheetah, but they're helping all the other predators within the system. And our programs are also helping predators, wolf here in America, issues around jaguars, mountain lions.
All this takes funds, and twice a year, Dr. Lurie goes on tour in the United States. She has been traveling throughout California, giving presentations, signing books, and raising money, as well as making known the plight of the cheetah. Dr. Lurie is a remarkable and strong woman who has accomplished a lot in her 60 years. She is considered the world's foremost expert on cheetah biology. She holds a doctoral degree in zoology from the University of Oxford, but her career in wildlife conservation, particularly cheetahs, began in 1974 at an accredited zoological park called Wildlife Safari in Oregon, where she helped to develop a captive breeding program for cheetahs that came from the wild in Namibia. She became the cheetah curator there and later took a position at the Smithsonian Institution National Zoological Park in Washington, D.C., as the executive director of the zoo's New Opportunities in Animal Health Science Center, or NOAA Center, with which she still maintains ties. Like the biblical figure Noah himself, Dr. Lurie envisions herself as a protector of animals and the habitat in Africa, although she says, there are not more prizes for predicting rain, only prizes for building the ark. Since 1990, she has dedicated herself to the conservation of the cheetah. She has also authored a book detailing her plans titled A Future for Cheetahs. She thinks she was chosen by the cheetah. She says, "With my first look into their eyes, they captured me and brought me into their life, heart, and soul." After learning that cheetahs rarely bred in captivity and were being lost in the wild, she resolved to dedicate her efforts to saving the cheetah. It is easy to understand Dr. Lori's fascination with cheetahs. Gazing into the eyes of Kumbali, I was struck by her beauty and grace. Kumbali has been a magnificent ambassador for the San Diego Zoo for the past 13 years. Unfortunately, the cheetah is also Africa's most endangered cat, which is why Dr. Lori has been fighting so hard for their survival. You can learn more about efforts to save cheetahs and how you can help. You can visit the Cheetah Conservation Fund's website, cheetah.org.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with today's Green Scene Report. Neighbors battling wind energy projects locally just got some new ammunition in two separate legal cases. Wisconsin's Brown County Board of Health has voted to declare Duke Energy's Shirley Wind Energy Project a human health hazard to residents, visitors, workers, and others up to 6 miles away from the wind turbines. Here in San Diego's East County and neighboring Imperial County, wind turbines have been built within a half mile of homes, sometimes on three sides of them. Setbacks proposed on new projects pending remain much less than 6 miles locally, raising questions over potential dangers to residents if those projects are built. Now in Vermont, a federal district court has found that plaintiffs provided ample evidence to allow a private nuisance claim there over the Sheffield Wind Project to proceed in court for creating unreasonable noise. Plaintiffs allege that the Vermont wind turbines have caused pain, stress, suffering, and loss of property for residents, also preventing them from gardening, walking, or even dining outdoors. The court denied a motion by defendants who had sought to dismiss the nuisance claim. The Wisconsin Board of Health based its decision to declare a wind project a health hazard on a year-long study of infrasound or low-frequency noise in the area. Health hazard is defined by that board as capable of causing acute or chronic illness or death if not abated. A doctor described symptoms among patients near that wind facility as devastating, including ear pressure, pain, tinnitus, vertigo, headache, nausea, chest pain pressure, abdominal pain, sleep disruption, and depression. Several residents there have abandoned their homes. The Wisconsin wind project could be ordered torn down unless the developer can prove that its turbines are not what is causing the health problems experienced by neighbors. Health problems that are remarkably similar to what some neighbors of wind farms in San Diego's East County and Imperial County have complained about. Whether or not decision makers will take heed of these concerns and avoid subjecting rural residents here to such conditions, or take steps to correct conditions that already exist, remains to be seen.
Nationwide, more than 2,300 people die and another 13,000 are injured in home fires each year. This month, the American Red Cross kicked off a national campaign to reduce deaths and injuries from house fires by as much as 25% over the next 5 years. While installing smoke detectors and changing the batteries is an important part of fire safety, the group's Anne Marie Borrego says your family's escape plan is just as important.
I would say if there's one thing that you can do today, it's to go home and really practice that escape plan. I can't emphasize enough how important it is to sit down and talk with your family and actually see how long it's going to take you to get out of your home.
A recent Red Cross survey found that people believe they have more time than they do to escape a burning home. Fire experts estimate people have as little as 2 minutes to escape, while 62% of respondents believe they have at least 5 minutes. According to the survey, nearly 7 in 10 parents believed their children knew what to do if their house caught on fire, but less than 1 in 5 families with children have practiced home fire drills, and less than half of them have talked with their children about fire safety. Borrego says fire safety is a conversation worth having with your kids.
My advice would be to do it in a very matter-of-fact manner. It's important to talk with them about the need to prepare, just in case, and to reassure them that mom and dad are doing this so that everyone stays safe.
The National Fire Protection Association recommends smoke alarms be installed inside of every bedroom and on every level of your home. For Public News Service, I'm Lori Abbott.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
You're listening to East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
This is Ed Barena on East County Magazine here on KNSJ. Today I'm interviewing our editor, Miriam Raftery, and our contributor, Leon Thompson, from the East County Wellness Center here in El Cajon. Miriam and Leon, thanks for being here today.
Pleasure to be here and be at the other end of the microphone.
All right, today we're here to discuss an upcoming event. We're hosting it. Actually, East County Magazine is hosting the event on Sunday, October 26th from 4 to 7 p.m. at the Next Door Wine and Craft Beer Bar. Miriam, could you tell us a little about the event?
Sure. It's called Party with the Press, and listeners, you are all invited. It is open to all East County Magazine subscribers, and fortunately, subscriptions are free. You can go on eastcountymagazine.org to sign up to get our weekly newsletter and your very personal invitation. The event is going to include wine tasting, craft beer tasting, pasta, appetizers, desserts, all kinds of good food, and a lot of other activities. We're going to have prizes, chef's basket, wine basket, dinners, Zumba, yoga lessons, all kinds of good things.
Okay, and I heard there's a cooking contest, and Leon, you have some information about the cooking contest, I understand.
Well, I understand that the East County Eater will actually be there, and he'll be there to judge the most healthy, good-tasting dish brought in by a volunteer who wishes to do so and impress our socks off. And as you know, the East County Eater just had quintuple bypass, so he's looking for healthy food. There will also be a prize for the most exotic dish and the most favorite overall dish.
Awesome. So the winner gets to have their dish basically published in the magazine. Do you publish a recipe?
They're willing to share it, we would be delighted to share that. And plus, we'll have prizes for them. And you can also earn prizes some other ways. We're going to have prize drawings, and we're going to have the East County Trivia Quiz. If you haven't played this before, it's hilarious and a lot of fun. So you'll find all the answers in East County Magazine. If you keep reading all our issues, you'll know all the answers. You will do very well.
We're also going to have a little bit of entertainment.
The next door bar,
and you bring your LPs, bring your long-playing records. We have a turntable.
Yeah, it's a blast from the past where you can bring your old vinyl records, and I understand, Leon's son happens to be a musician, Ed, you're a musician too, that vinyl is back in vogue. The young kids today are getting into vinyl once again.
Yeah, it's a great form of capturing music. So bring your vinyl down too. It sounds like that would be a really fun way to share some, you know, older music and maybe some of the newer music that might be out there on vinyl.
Yeah, and Ed, by the way, is our craft beer columnist, our Brewbeat columnist, and he's going to be doing a review of the craft beers there, and you can check out his Brewbeat column on our site, one of many that we have. This is an opportunity, folks, for you to mix and mingle and meet all of our radio personalities, as well as our columnists, myself, the editor, our reporters, and also to tell us your ideas. We are your community media. This is a chance for you to come in, let us know what you would like to see covered. You can get more information also about our wildfire and emergency alerts, Viejas wildfire alerts, and everything that we do is a free service to the public. So this helps support our radio show, our award-winning news coverage, and our wildfire alerts.
Anything that's going to be kind of a benefit to our listeners from coming to the party?
Well, sure. You can learn about all the news coming up. You can learn how to be the media if you want to get involved and you want to volunteer, or even learn about working into paid positions in the media. Those are all opportunities that we have. You can tell us what's important to you, and you can just come out and have a good time and have some fun and support the media, because we are your community media. We are nonprofit. We represent the public interest, not special interests.
All right. Well said. Okay. So that's about it. So that'll be this Sunday, October 26th, 4 to 7 p.m. at the Next Door Wine and Craft Beer Bar at 7235 El Cajon Boulevard.
Absolutely. And if you want information or you want to make reservations, you can go to eastcountymagazine.org. The invitation's right on the front of the site. Remember, you just have to click to be a subscriber, and then you're invited. And you can also RSVP by calling 698-7617 or emailing editor@eastcountymagazine.org if you have questions or want more details.
Okay, well, thanks a lot, Miriam and Leon, for coming and sharing about this upcoming event. I'm hoping to be there in a tie.
Very good. Well, that I look forward to seeing. Okay. Thanks, guys, so much for being here and helping us get the word out.
This is Leon Thompson with a public service announcement on East County Magazine. The Sheriff's Department is looking for horse owners and riders who would like to become members of the Volunteer Mounted Patrol. They conduct patrols on horseback across San Diego County, including the Santee and Lakeside areas. The Santee Sheriff Station is hosting a recruitment meeting on Tuesday, October 21st at 6:30 p.m. at the Santee Sheriff Substation in their conference room at 8811 Cuyamaca Road in Santee. The station's captains, lieutenants, sergeant, and members of the Volunteer Mounted Patrol will be in attendance to answer questions about the unit. Light refreshments will be provided. For more information, visit sdsheriff.net/volunteers or call the Sheriff's Volunteer Services at 858-974-2084.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County has some awesome autumn activities, from a spooky hayride in Julian to classic car cruising at Santee Lakes, plus an international jousting competition, all in San Diego's inland regions.
Plus, we have a preview of next week's coming attractions, including Live on the Promenade in Lemon Grove and Haunt Fest in Main Street in downtown El Cajon.
So stay tuned for all of these events and much, much more from East County Magazine.
An international jousting competition will be held during the Tournament of the Phoenix and Festival of History held October 7th through 19th at the Powwow Rodeo Grounds. This fascinating event also features period camps from Rome to the Renaissance. This year, the festivities feature some new attractions, including a bird of prey flight show, storytelling, gypsy horses, a border horse, 16th century reenactment, craft beers, and extended children's activities. For ticket information and details, visit worldjoust.com.
All makes, models, and years of automotive history are welcome to partake in Cruise in the Lakes car show at Santee Lakes. The last two cruise events this season take place on Friday, October 17th and 24th, beneath the shade trees at the northwest corner of Lake One, where show time starts at 3 p.m. and ends at 7 p.m., complete with music and barbecue grills. Bring stories, a chair, fishing pole, and picnic basket. Prize drawings will also be held at this event, sponsored by the Classic Movers and Shakers Car Club.
The Julian Mining Company will host a spooky hayride on October 18th and 25th at 7:30 and 8:30 p.m., complete with tales of early miners in this historic gold rush town. Advance reservations are required. Tickets can be reserved at julianminingcompany.com. Arrive a half hour early for free popcorn and apple cider.
It's all aboard the Pumpkin Express at the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum in Campo. The 10th annual Halloween seasonal rides take place Saturday and Sunday from now through October 26th, with trains departing three times daily. Ride the rails to the Great Pumpkin Patch, then tour the haunted train, where each child gets to pick out his or her own pumpkin and decorate it. Advance reservations are required for this popular event. For ticket prices, reservations, and directions to the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum, visit www.psrm.com. www.julianopenstudio.org.
The Julian Open Studio and Galleries Tour will be held on Saturday, October 18th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Visit the private studios of artists in the backcountry of San Diego on this self-guided tour. Meet and talk with the artists while enjoying their artwork. Maps and tickets are available at the Julian Town Hall on Main Street in the heart of the historic Gold Rush era town.
An enchanted garden gala to benefit the Water Conservation Garden at Cuyamaca College will be held on October 18th from 6 to 10 p.m. Performance artists will entertain guests amidst illuminated gardens, and a gourmet seated dinner will be followed by a program hosted by NBC TV Channel 7 meteorologist Dagmar Midcap. The program benefits the gardens, educational programs, and a new children's garden. For more information, visit thegarden.org.
The Shirt House Bluegrass Band will perform a free concert at the El Cajon Library on Saturday, October 18th at 2 p.m. The concert is presented by the San Diego Bluegrass Society and will feature folk, rock, gospel, and bluegrass music.
Friends of the Lemon Grove Library's music series will present the acclaimed guitarist and composer Peter Sprague in the Modern Jazz program. This free concert will be held on October 21st in the Lemon Grove Library at 6:30 p.m. and is suitable for ages 12 and over.
The third annual Haunt Fest on Main Street will provide thrills for all ages on Friday, October 24th from 5 until 10 p.m. in downtown El Cajon. The annual family-friendly event features live music on two stages by Mighty Untouchables, Fabulous Pelicans, and Ryan Hiller. A costume contest will be held on the Main Street stage. There will also be expanded carnival rides and a game area on Rio Street and a car display, a terror truck, candy trails, kids zone, and outdoor movies at balloon artists and face painting performances by TNT Dancers, Rubio's Performing Arts Studio, and St. Madeline Sophie's Center. Other activities include craft and game booths, a magic show, inflatable jumpers for kids, and a pumpkin patch and more. For additional information, visit HauntFestMaine.com.
City Beat teams up with the Lemon Grove Historical Society to present Lemon Grove Live on October 25th from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Main Street Promenades Amphitheater, located at the corner of Broadway and Lemon Grove Avenue. Bring a cushion and enjoy this free concert featuring a wide variety of street musicians, including opera, rock, indie folk, saxophone, and world music.
The Borrego Days Desert Festival takes place October 24th through October 26th in Borrego Springs. Activities include a parade complete with floats, bands, dancers, and equestrians, a flyover, live inflatable water slides, obstacle course, and bull ride. Visitors can also shop at arts and craft vendors, savor foods including gourmet food truck items, beer, and beverage garden. For more information, visit the Borrego Springs Chamber of Commerce website.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event or you'd like to add to our calendar, or if you'd like to sponsor the Destination East County show on KNSJ, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County. See you around, East County.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
You're listening to East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
The Descanso Community Water District Board is accused of covering up matters that could endanger health and property values, including uranium contamination in the public drinking water. Those allegations and more are raised in an open letter titled Secrecy, the Disease of Corrupt Public Officials. It was sent by the board's vice president,
Jeff Rosendahl, and co-signed by the board's former treasurer, an incoming director, and a ratepayer. The letter was sent to District Attorney Bonnie DeMonis, the county grand jury, public health regulators, elected officials, media, and ratepayers. It urges the ratepayers to attend the Water Board's next meeting on Monday, October 27th, which will be held at the Descanso Town Hall. The letter accuses Water Board President Lee Johnson of incompetence and acting unilaterally without informing the board on numerous issues. East County Magazine has asked Johnson for a response, but we have not yet received one. The letter alleges several cover-ups by Johnson, including withholding information on uranium treatment from the board for 4 months, failing to provide all board members with copies of a median household income survey that was done for potential grant funding, withholding a resume from the board for a woman who applied for the district's general manager position, and withholding key correspondence from a ratepayer who had a property dispute with the district. Board members reportedly received copies of the letter only after legal action was threatened. The letter also claims that the current board treasurer, Sherry Minix, acted in a discriminatory manner against a ratepayer who was originally from Europe and speaks with an accent. At a meeting last September, the 30-year-old resident of Descanso spoke critically about the board's president. Minix came to the president's defense, according to the letter, telling the ratepayer, "If you don't like it, why don't you go back where you came from?" In addition, the letter asserts that $1.7 million in repairs are needed in this small-town rural district. The high uranium level in the water has still not been resolved. Plus, a contract bid at $40,000 wound up costing the ratepayers $110,000. According to the letter sent to legal watchdogs and health regulators, the board president, quote, needs to know that following the law and respecting people's rights is what is best for the district, unquote. The water board currently has multiple vacancies, but so far, no volunteers have stepped forward to fill these seats in the troubled Descanso Community Water District. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Ed Barena with East County Magazine's Health Report. West Nile virus is being found at record levels in California, the state's top health official warns. Dr. Ron Chapman, director of the California Department of Public Health, or CDPH, and state health officer, is reminding Californians to remain vigilant against the threat of West Nile virus. The proportion of mosquitoes infected with West Nile virus is at the highest level ever detected in California, Chapman said earlier this month, after 52 new human cases were reported in a single week. He added, quote, "We expect to see more people become infected as this is the time of year when the risk of infection is the highest," unquote. So far in 2014, West Nile virus has been detected in 36 California counties. There have been 181 human cases reported to the state, a significant increase compared to the 101 cases reported by this time last year. That includes 8 confirmed deaths. West Nile virus is transmitted to humans and animals by the bite of an infected mosquito. For most people, the risk of serious illness is low. However, some individuals, less than 1%, can develop a serious neurologic illness, such as encephalitis or meningitis. People 50 years of age or older and people with diabetes or high blood pressure have the greatest risk of developing serious complications. CDPH recommends that individuals prevent exposure to mosquito bites and West Nile virus by practicing the following steps. Apply appropriate insect repellent to keep mosquitoes from biting you. Mosquitoes bite in the early morning and evening, so it's wise to wear protective clothing and repellent if outside during these times. Make sure that your doors and windows have tight-fitting screens to keep out mosquitoes and repair or replace screens with tears or holes. Mosquitoes lay their eggs on standing water, so eliminate all sources of standing water on your property, including flower pots, old car tires, and buckets. If you know of a swimming pool that is not being properly maintained, please contact the county's vector control agency. California's West Nile Virus website includes the latest information on West Nile virus activity in the state. Californians are encouraged to report all dead birds on the website at www.westnile.ca.gov.
This is Janice Moore, host of People Power, profiling people and organizations making a positive difference in our community and our world.
This is Janice Moore with East County Magazine and People Power. And I am here with Dr. Carole Ja Mira. She has been selected as one of 22 brilliant, beautiful, and brave Black women.
Her profile is on display at the Women's Museum here in San Diego.
Dr. Carole, what good works have you been doing for the community?
Recently, We went through a group called the San Diego Ambassador Program. I'm one of the elders, and we do a lot of things. They went to Washington and to New York, 2012 and 2015. They went to go to Haiti in 2016, Water for Africa with Vicky Butcher, and so they raised funds. And so with the program, what we did, they had a sleepover a Saturday, and they gave me a Youth Ambassador Volunteer Certificate.
And this was Saturday, March the 1st? Okay.
Also, I'm going to be going to Haiti 10 days from now. We're having a group of students from University of Dartmouth, Massachusetts, our School of Business. We're going to see how to enhance the program that we have of agriculture and safe water. And I've been going back and forth since 1999, and we lost a lot in 2010 with the earthquake.
And what else have you been doing in Haiti in the past since you started going back there?
I've helped them. We build their homes, sending them to school. Since 1999, we created the Angels for Haiti project, and a lot of people in San Diego support me for that. And that's in 2001, they wanted scholarships, school band, art, and music. So I help with the hospital whenever I can, but they will have to pull me and drag me because I say I want to be with the children. So I do program, art, music, a school garden. I can go there. And the idea is to teach them how to fish, teach agriculture, how to sell it in the neighborhood villages, and also how we can transform the foods. Let's say if you have pepper, how to do pepper sauce.
What is the Angels for Haiti project all about?
In 1993, I formed the Health Through Communications Foundation, which was a program. At the time, I wasn't going back to Haiti. And it was to do program for underserved population in San Diego. So I feel if you give a child a brush or a musical instrument, he or she will never touch a gun. That's simple. It's an opportunity to be part of the community. And then in 1999, when I decided it was time to start going back to Haiti, so I went to replicate what I did. So I took in my energy from here in the community and do more community public health in Haiti, while here I only did free medical care, like with Father Joe. That's why we call it the Angels for Haiti. So people raise money. We have scholarships for the school. So this is part of what the Angels for Haiti do. It's education, scholarship.
That's very good work that you do. What other good works have you done in the past?
In San Diego, let's see, when you do some volunteer work, I work with the Urban Indian, San Diego Urban Indian Clinic downtown. And for many years also, I work with the Kumeyaay Indians, the Borona, the Sequans. At the time, they didn't have much money as a OBGYN. And after that, they were very grateful and to give me money to start the art and the music program in Haiti. The Sequans, very good to me. As a gynecologist, I was one of the founders of the Rachel Center for the Homeless Clinic. Started in 1986. Then I had started with the St. Vincent de Paul Village Clinic with Father Joe in 1997. So to this day, which is in April, is going to be 17 years. So I do volunteer work. Also, I do volunteer work in El Cajon for the past year and a half. There is a clinic called Volunteer in Medicine. So I've been doing free medical care for women who have no insurance. So those are the three things I do in San Diego. And I do things also in other countries, including Haiti, where I've been going back and forth and doing a lot for the children. We have medical care and art, music.
Very nice. And how did you find out that you were selected as one of the 22 brilliant, beautiful, and brave Black women at the San Diego Women's Museum?
I got an email, and I said, are you telling me that I'm one of the chosen women? They said, yes, you are, and we are so honored to have you. I felt honored. Yes, that was my reaction, because there are so many wonderful women doing wonderful things around in San Diego, beautiful Black women doing a lot of beautiful things, and I was glad that I was chosen. Also, there are a lot of the other people that I know. We've worked together for many, many years, so it was like a sister reunion.
When did you find out that you were selected?
February 6th, it's about a month prior to that. And there were some things they wanted from us, like they wanted to know a favorite quote. And also, who inspired me as a woman? And also, whatever I wanted to say. And they wanted a little something. So I chose the quote from Saint Thérèse de Lisieux, and where it says, I am at the right place at the right time. You know, something to be in the moment. You believe you are where you're supposed to be. I have it next to my computer because my journey has been very long and there were many things that I've accomplished and I felt, oh, this is it. But I'm always continually growing. And also I had a picture of my grandmother. My grandmother raised me since I was 4. She was my father's mother. My grandmother didn't know how to write her name until she was 64 years old. And I taught her how to write her name letter by letter. And the day she signed her name on the passport, it was the most beautiful day in her life. And what I learned is that it's never too late to learn. She was 64 years old.
How do patients find out about you? How do you get your name out there?
I'm working with Matt. He read some of my writings and he said, you know what? You are a very powerful person, because he had a friend who was sick. And then I saw him and I said, this is what's wrong with you. And change his life. And then that's how he ended up meeting me. And he said, when I went on the internet, I didn't see the powerful person who you are in person. I don't see it. So I've been working with him since July.
Is there anything else that you would like the readers to know about you?
I'm very happy. All the past issues that I've had, I was able to deal with them. So now I'm in a stage where I have accomplished many things in my life. I'm content with what I have. I am blessed that I'm sound of mind and I'm able to help a lot of people who are suffering.
This is Janice Mark with East County Magazine and People Power. I just interviewed Dr. Carole Jha Mira, and she has been selected as one of the 22 brilliant, beautiful, and brave Black women. And her profile is on display at the San Diego Women's Museum until March 28th. Thank you, Dr. Carole.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
This is East County Magazine's Capital Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Leon Thompson with today's Capital Report. Last month, we reported on a Democratic legislator, Ben Hueso, who was arrested for driving under the influence after a night of partying at the state capitol. Now we're reporting on a prominent Republican making headlines for partying on Capitol Hill. For the past 28 years, the Washingtonian has surveyed congressional aides about the leadership qualities, or lack thereof, of House members in its Best and Worst of Congress annual report. While some districts' representatives achieve such honors as being named the top workhorse, rising star, or wisest member of Congress, the designation as the top party animal in the House of Representatives was awarded to 50th Congressional District Representative Duncan D. Hunter. That's after House Speaker John Boehner reportedly asked certain House members to refrain from partying with lady lobbyists, Salon reported in 2010. The article cites the New York Post and reports that lobbyist Glenn Lemunyan, a former staffer for disgraced Congressman Tom DeLay, has been hosting after-hours house drinking parties at his home for female lobbyists to socialize with legislators. The publication lists a handful of congressional Republican members who have reportedly frequented Lemunyan's gatherings, including Congressman Duncan D. Hunter, who ran on a family values platform and whose district includes part of San Diego and East County. Those congressional party animals have not been accused of any unlawful activities, it should be noted. The Washingtonian has this to say about the results of this year's survey of congressional staffers published earlier this month. Despite approval ratings lower than Vladimir Putin's, the men and women of the 113th Congress have continued to debate, investigate, raise funds, and campaign with ebullience. Seeing as little, if any, legislation arises from their activities, it's apparent that if there are winners and losers, hits and misses, the average citizen isn't privy to the scorecard, according to the Washingtonian.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today we're interviewing local author, editor, and teacher Mark A. Clements. My guest has had 4 novels published and has edited dozens of others. His book, The Land of Nod, won Best Horror or Mystery, and the first Theodore Geisel Award at the San Diego Book Awards, where he will be this year's Master of Ceremonies. Mark also teaches at San Diego Writers, Inc., the Southern California Writers Conference, and the La Jolla Writers Conference. He is especially known for his late-night read and critique workshops and his pep talks on perseverance and passion. Welcome, Mark. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Your first book, 602, A Ghost Story, was written on a typewriter and traditionally published in 1989. And now all your books are available as ebooks. How have these changes in the publishing industry affected you as a novelist and teacher?
The truth is they don't affect me at all. An awful lot of people who are beginning writers or even fairly experienced writers who have not been published start to put things backwards. They start to be concerned about, do I go with a conventional publisher? Do I publish this as an ebook? Before they've actually finished the job. To me, the writing of the book itself comes first. You write the book for yourself and for the people around you to make it as perfect as you can. Then you worry about how and where to publish it.
You also teach a class called Poetry for Novelists. With so many industry challenges, how do you keep those literary fires burning?
First of all, I read poetry, which is a fairly recent interest of mine. Also lots of nonfiction and essays, articles, as well as novels and short stories. The idea being to learn everything that you can, which is a never-ending process. Try to find the things that appeal to you and pull from them the things that will inspire your own writing and help you in your own writing. And then worry later about what you're going to do with that work when it's done.
Your books have been categorized as horror, yet you also focus a great deal on character development. Do you still define your work as part of the horror genre? And if so, what does that mean to you?
The genre thing is kind of a pain. Stephen King actually referred to the horror genre as a ghetto at the time when it... Now a lot of bookstores no longer have that genre separated out in a ghetto. They kind of come and go depending on the tastes of the public, of the reading public. But I don't. That's something else I don't concern myself with personally. I write what I want to write. My books were all marketed as horror and had covers that indicated that, but they crossed genres and they had a wide variety of things. One of them was sort of a detective story in a fashion. 602, as you said, was a ghost story. Another would qualify more as a thriller. It always varies, and those are marketing decisions that publishers used to make. Of course, now a lot of authors have to make that kind of choice themselves if they go the self-publishing route. But my good example of how this can be damaging is Michael Crichton. His first book that he published under his own name was called The Andromeda Strain. And by any categorization, it was hard science fiction. But they didn't publish it that way. They didn't market it that way. When it was on the shelves, it was just put in fiction. And we all know what happened with Michael Crichton's career. If he'd been stuck in the science fiction ghetto, the odds of that happening would have been greatly reduced. He would have been considered a science fiction writer. And all of those people out there who say, well, I don't read science fiction, just as there are people who say, I don't read horror, I don't read romance, whatever, would never have picked it up. And history would not have been what it has become in the book world as a result.
Right. And we all love Crichton. What is your next book about? And do you know when it will be available?
It's hard to say when it'll be available. I've been working on it forever. It is a kind of a rumination on evolution in all of its aspects. Evolution of individual people, their personalities, their behaviors. Evolution of life on Earth and ways that it might have been different under different circumstances. What if the circumstances were to change and the whole process of evolution of life on Earth were to change? How would the life that's already here deal with it? So again, horror, science fiction, mainstream fiction, what is it? I don't know. All I know is that I'm trying to make it the finest book that I possibly can.
Well, we look forward to reading it. Mark, our time is up, but thank you again for joining us. For more information on Mark A. Clements and his work, please visit his website at www.markaclements.com. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
This is Ed Barrena with an announcement regarding the results from the San Diego Press Club's 2014 Excellence in Journalism competition. Once again, East County Magazine will be bringing home multiple awards. Congratulations to our 7 winners this year who represent East County Magazine's online news site and our radio show on KNSJ. The winners include our breaking news coverage team, Tom and Nadine Abbott, intern Jessica Richman, who worked on several major investigative news stories, father and son Mark and Corey Clement, co-hosts of our Wildest Jobs in East County feature on our radio show, Leon Thompson, who documented his recovery from quintuple bypass surgery, and East County Magazine editor Miriam Raftery. We don't yet know how many awards we will receive, or all of the categories, since only the names of the winners have been announced thus far. The winning entries will be announced at the annual Press Club Awards ceremony on October 28th at Jacobs Center. East County Magazine has previously received 69 journalism awards since beginning our news publication in 2008.
This is a public service announcement from East County Magazine. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts provide important information about much more than wildfires. In these winter months, you can receive free alerts via email or Twitter on your mobile phone about emergencies such as flash floods, road closures, heavy snow, and other severe weather alerts, as well as wildfires, traffic reports, and more. You can sign up for this free public service at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Indians.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.